Hi, and welcome back to the English Speaking Frenchy Reads. Today, I would love to share with you my 2020 bookish favorites. I know that a lot of people have already published out and that we are actually in February of 2021, but it's never too late to share with you my favorites, right? I have a blog post that is ready to go about my favorites, but I thought that it would be cool to have a podcast episode to discuss these favorites a bit more and to give you more than actually 8 favorites, because in 2020 I have read around 70 books. According to my Goodreads challenge, it's 62, but I have read, kind of very obscure books that nobody never reads and that end up not being on Goodreads. That's basically what I read. To go to the 70, I had actually planned on reading 40 books, which was already a lot for me. As I am also a student and a librarian on the side, I don't take that much time to read, even though I'm studying literature, which is kind of weird, I know, but due to lockdowns, in the plural form, you know, so due to lockdowns, I have come to read a lot more than planned and actually almost the double of my initial reading goal. I have favorites in very different realms, so here I have my Goodreads challenge in front of me, and I think that to make it a little bit more natural, I will just have a look at the books in front of me and tell you which books I actually enjoyed. There are a lot of books among the ones I read that I didn't really like and that don't deserve to me the adjective of favorite, even though I do think that they were still good. So if you are interested into the details, maybe have a look at my Goodreads 2020 reading challenge and look at my rating, because sometimes I rated books quite high even though they are not my quote-unquote favorites. To start with, I think that I could talk about the two books that I have read in the very, very end of 2020. The first one is called Love, Lies and Liquor. So for the little story, it's an MC Beaton book. And maybe you know these books. Those are mystery novels. And it's written by MC Beaton and starring the character of Agatha Raisin. So I think Love, Lies and Liquor is like the 17th book in the series. So it's a very big series. And it's typically not the kind of book that I would have chosen to read, but as I am a librarian, I told you, I see that those books are rented so much. I'm not kidding. I feel like everyone in the library has at least read one of them, and the covers, not to lie, are just the prettiest. If you have time, just have a look. You type Agatha Raisin by MC Beaton and you have a look at the covers, and oh my god, they are those beige and pink with roses and cakes on the cover. It's just so beautiful, and I had to read it. So it has become one of my favorites, even though I feel like it's quite weird, because when I first read it, I felt a little bit disappointed because I had placed so high expectations on that. Because everyone was renting it, I was just believing that it was, you know, a masterpiece. And I can't say that it's bad. It's one of my favorites. It's actually very good. But it's because of my expectations that I was first disappointed. So you are following the adventures of Agatha Raisin, who is a private detective, and in that particular book she is going into a holiday with her ex-husband, and she is trying to actually make him fall in love again with her, and there is a murder in the hotel they are staying in. Actually, it is an awful hotel. It's just very run down, and she just wants to leave, but she gets accused of a murder here, and she needs to stay in the hotel in order to prove that she is innocent. And I thought this book was just very, very interesting to read, and the character of Agatha Raisin is very spicy, and she says what she thinks. She is very into provocation, which I actually loved, because I was thinking about Agatha Christie's books, And in comparison, her characters are very, very cool as well, but they are not that spicy. And I love that we had a private detective that was that spicy and provocative, and we can imagine how she dresses, and that's very cool, I think. She is, I think, in her 40s or 50s in her adventures, and seeing a woman in her 40s and 50s acting that way is just very refreshing, I think. So that's totally something I would recommend. My next favorite book is very different, and it's a book that was published, I think, in 2007. Yes. It's always quite good for me. If you don't know me, I am French, and sometimes I end up saying quite weird things when it comes to English. So it's The Book with No Name, written by an anonymous author. I just loved it. It is the weirdest book I have read. Or maybe the weirdest book I have read is Bunny by Mona Awad. I talked about it in my January wrap-up. But literally, The Book with No Name is so weird. It really made me think of Quentin Tarantino's movies. You have access to so many characters that have absolutely nothing to do together and that are doing things that look so weird. There are even supernatural characters here. You don't know where they're coming from. It's in the middle of the book. They are vampires, and wow. That's such a weird book, but I loved it so much. We are following what happened in a little city. I think it is in Mexico. I hope I'm not mistaken. And in that city, there are just awful things happening, always murders, and it's a very disgusting city. It's described as something that is very disgusting and in which a lot of murderers are living, and rapists, murderers, I mean criminals in general, very terrible criminals. And there is this man called Bourbon Kid who committed atrocities 5 years ago, and the people in the city are thinking that he's coming back because other atrocious murders have been committed in the city of, I think it's Santa Mandega, yeah. And really, it's so interesting. There are monks from an island somewhere coming to take a jewelry that actually would kill the Bourbon Kid. It's so weird. It's so complicated to talk about it within giving spoilers, because I don't want to ruin your experience of The Book with No Name. It is so weird to get into it and to see all of those characters arriving on the scene, just feeling like they do not deserve a place here, and it's so out of place, you know. I don't want to ruin your experience, so I will just, you know, shut up about The Book with No Name. But if you have a moment to read it, maybe have a look at it, because I just loved it. And I know it's so weird and so many people hated it, but I think if you love Quentin Tarantino's movies, you may love The Book with No Name. Maybe not, but tell me. I really liked it altogether. Another favorite of mine is a middle grade this time, and it's the Nevermore series, but the first book only, because I haven't read the two other books. I think in the Nevermore series by... oh my god, I forgot the author, but I think it's Mrs. Townshend, Jessica Townshend, maybe, I hope. But in this series, we are following the adventures of Morrigan Crow. And in the first book of the series, we are following her trials, because actually, Morrigan is a cursed child. And she is supposed to die, or to be killed more exactly, on her 11th birthday. And she has had the saddest life. I mean, her family doesn't seem to very much love her, and she is doomed from the day she was born. Everything bad that happens in the city she lives in is put on her because she is cursed, and she is always accused of everything because of that curse. And one day, on her 11th birthday, actually, a man comes and takes her to Nevermore. And in Nevermore, she discovers that actually magic does exist, and she has to go into several trials to get into the Wanderer's Society, which is a weird society, but if you get into it, you become a very elite person in Nevermore, everybody loves you, and the sole wish of Morrigan is actually to be loved. She wants to have friends, and thus she goes into those trials thinking that she just can't go there, because she thinks she's not talented enough, and she just doesn't know anything about those trials. And her benefactor doesn't explain anything about this. She goes into the trials very, almost blind, and it's such a beautiful book. There are a lot of plot twists, and it's altogether one of my favorite middle grades, if not my favorite middle grade. So if you have a moment to maybe listen to it or read it, I mean, I know that there are very good audio versions of the Nevermore series, but really, maybe it would be a way for you to get into middle grades if it's not your thing, because personally, I just loved it so, so much. And yeah, following the adventures of an 11 years old is always something I would recommend. For a book that is not that refreshing, I am thinking about Yoga by Emmanuel Carrère. I'm not sure it has been translated yet. It was a book that was published during last year, 2020, Rentrée Littéraire. So in France, I don't know if you know, I think it's a little bit specific to my country, but we have a time in September where it's what we call the Rentrée Littéraire. So it would be a literary back to school, in order to translate it quite literally. And it's at the time of back to school, there are around 500 books that are published by our publishers. And those are our new releases. And those releases are actually nominated for for literary prizes, sorry. And Yoga is one of them. Emmanuel Carrère is a very famous author here in France. He's been translated, but I don't think Yoga has been. And basically, in Yoga, he explains in a very stream of consciousness manner his adventures and his passion for yoga and for meditation. And in this book, you can find mingled together stories of terrorism and of spiritual retreats and things that actually just don't go together at all, but it's very autobiographical, like every Emmanuel Carrère's book. It's always super autobiographical, but it's romanticized in such a way that it's so beautiful and easy to read. It's a very weird type of book. It's not the type of stream of consciousness you would find in Virginia Woolf's books, for instance. It's very specific to Emmanuel Carrère, and if you have the occasion to grab one of his books translated into English or into your native language, because I know that I have listeners from absolutely everywhere, maybe have a look at it, because I had never read an entire book by Emmanuel Carrère. I knew about him, but I had never had the opportunity to read one of his books, and I just loved the way it was written. It was so beautiful, so that's something I would highly recommend. I don't know how I can describe it further without giving terrible spoilers about it, but just know going into it that it's going to be a little bit like an autobiography, but only dedicated to certain topics. And I thought reading that book that really things that don't go together usually are explained in the voice of a man who lived them all in a very short period of time, who lived the terrible atrocities of terrorism, and who also lived a spiritual retreat almost the same day. And I think it's so, I don't know if beautiful is the right word, but it's strong to have in the same book the adventures of a man who actually lived it all, and who decides that yes, those things that don't go together can go together because he has lived them. And yeah, I mean, maybe have a look at it yourself. It's the best way, I think, to understand what I mean here. The next book that is totally one of my favorites, and that is so weird as well, but it's not the same kind of weird than the book with no name, is Kafka's Metamorphosis. It's a classic, and I think everyone knows more or less what Kafka's Metamorphosis is, but basically, it's the story of a man who becomes an insect. It's quite weird to say it like this, but that's the metamorphosis of a man into an insect, and a lot of people have discussed this book and have commented on that book. Some people think that he never becomes an actual insect, but that it's a metaphor. Other people think that he actually is an insect. Other people think that he becomes the actual insect because his family doesn't love him and he feels like an insect. You know, it's very complicated to explain without giving more spoilers, because now that you know he becomes an insect and nobody knows if he actually does, you know already quite a lot about the book. But it was very interesting to read, very disturbing. That's totally a book that I would recommend you read around Halloween this year, because I didn't read it actually in at Halloween. I read it in September, and it's totally something that I think I will reread this year around, you know, end of November. Oh my god, the end of October, beginning of November. And now it's a series that I want to discuss, because I just couldn't pick one book of the series. The series is called The Mirror Visitor, and it's YA, but YA slash adult. I will explain why. And so the series called The Mirror Visitor is a series by Christelle Dabos, and it's a French series, but the three first books have been translated into English, and the fourth one has not. And I think there is a fifth one, but I haven't read the fifth one. I think it's a little bit like a prequel. But I know that the three first books have been translated, and they are about 600 to 800 pages each, so you just can have a read, and I think you will have read the whole series of the three books before the fourth one is released, because I think it's planned and the translation is actually occurring right now. Basically, that's the story of Ophélie. And Ophélie lives on what I would call an arch. And imagine that our contemporary world is just divided into several arches. Maybe imagine that every of our continents just gets basically alone somewhere in the universe. And there are arches that actually fly, and others that don't. There are arches that get invisible, and everybody is on an arch, but you can't go on every arch whenever you want. Some of them do, but a lot of people just remain in their own little arch. And usually people marry inside that arch. So you marry your cousins, you marry people of your family, and every arch is actually a little microcosm with one family that is just divided into several things to do. Everybody has a job and everybody has a power. So every arch has a set number of powers, and Ophélie's power is actually to be able to read the past of objects. She is a reader, which means that she can read that past whenever she touches an object. But Ophélie doesn't want to marry, and she ends up married by force to a man named Thorn, who lives on another arch, and the arch where he lives is called, I think in English it would translate into the pole. So basically it's the whole north of their universe, and everybody at the pole is just not kind with Ophélie at all. She is feeling very alone and it's very hard for her, but we are following her adventures in every book, and she becomes someone who is a lot less clumsy and a lot less fragile through the books. She is becoming a woman in each book, an independent woman. She is going through very, very, very tough hardships, but she's becoming stronger and stronger. And what I love in that series is that even though she is becoming stronger and stronger through the pages and through the books, she keeps her values. And that's something that I usually reproach to a lot of books. Usually you have a character that is a little bit clumsy, that is very very shy and everything, and you would love her to be more independent, but when the character becomes independent, she ends up just not being the same person anymore. And that doesn't happen with Ophelie. She remains Ophelie, the Ophelie you love in the very beginning when she is so clumsy and shy and weirdo. She becomes just a better version of herself, but she remains herself, and I just love that. I mean, if you love magical stories, but that are not only magical and fantasy, but that have kind of an anchor in our world and our real world, maybe have a look at it, because I just loved it. And I classify it YA/adult, because, I mean, there is a forced marriage, and there are murders and things that, to me, are not only young adults. They are topics about what it means to be God and what it means to be a deity that are just so strong, and I just wouldn't recommend it to a very young adult. Maybe if you are 16, 17, that's okay, but I would say that before, it's not the kind of book that I would recommend at all. I would now love to share with you another of my favorites, which is Jane Austen's Persuasion. You need to know my love for Jane Austen before I get into that. So I just love Jane Austen. I haven't read everything by Jane Austen. I have read Pride and Prejudice. I have read Persuasion, obviously. I have read Emma, and I have read Mansfield Park. And I just love Persuasion. When you're reading Persuasion, so I have a full detailed review on the blog about it, and the link is in the description of the podcast if you're interested. But basically, you're following our main character, who, contrary to other Jane Austen's characters, is not that young. I'm not sure, I think she's 28 or 30, which is still young in our world, but in Jane Austen's period, it wasn't that young, and she is actually not married. In the beginning of the book, I was thinking that she was a little bit, I would say, flat, and that she let everyone be mean to her, but I understood through the book that actually our character was not flat at all. She is just very reserved, and she is very strong emotionally and doesn't feel the need to be mean to other people when they are mean to her. And it was very refreshing to follow her adventures and her love interest, because she has love interest, and she's actually wondering who she can be with. She's in love with a man, she doesn't know if he loves her. She had an adventure with another in a very remote time, but it didn't end up become a wedding, and she didn't marry the man even though she loved him. And now we are wondering if she's going to marry him today, now that she's 28, or if maybe he doesn't love her anymore. It's just a lot of Jane Austen's love interest, and we have Jane Austen's wit here, and she's so funny, and I just love reading it. I mean, it was wonderful, so I 100% recommend Persuasion, but only, I mean, if you are more into Jane Austen's very witty characters and very independent women characters, maybe don't go into Persuasion right now. Maybe you're just not ready right now. I know that it took me around a year to read it, because as I told you in the beginning, I was just feeling like she was a little stupid. I really thought that she has no brains in the beginning, which is very mean of me, but, you know, she was so kind, everyone being so mean to her, that I just was thinking that she wasn't really acknowledging their meanness with her. And so if you love Emma, for instance, the character of Emma, and I don't know, maybe don't go right now into Persuasion. I just love Emma as well, but you know what I mean. If you have read Persuasion, you know that those are very different characters. And yeah, but if you want something that is very soft and has a little bit of an Anne Bronte vibe to it, I would definitely recommend Persuasion. I am seeing on my Goodreads list a lot of other books that I would love to put into the favorites, but I mean, it would be very, very long. Two books that I'm not going to discuss today, but I really liked and I would absolutely advise you to read, are The Importance of Being Earnest. Wow, such a masterpiece. I have a full review of it also on the blog, and The other one is Stephen King's It, because I had seen the movie, but I just hadn't read the book, and it was wonderful. I mean, it's Stephen King, sometimes it's just so gore and very disgusting and terrible, but it was very good. I just had a problem with the end, but I always have a problem with Stephen King's end, and I think I'm not the only one here, but altogether it was very interesting, and you could just have a read at it. I would say that It, The Book with No Name, and Kafka's Metamorphosis are just books you could read in October/November this year, because it's just the Halloween type of book we love. So yeah, just 100% recommend. And now I think that I will just talk about two last books, because I have a lot to say about them. And yeah, so my first book, the first of the two last books, is Under the Volcano by Malcolm Lowry. I know it's a classic, but it's a classic that is very hard to read for everything about it. So Under the Volcano is basically the story of a consul who is now living in Mexico, and we are following his last day. We know from the very beginning, from the first chapter, that he's going to die and that this is the last day of his life, and we are following his last day. And actually, I think there are 12 chapters, and we are each chapter is actually 1 hour of his life. So we have his 12 last hours. I hope it's clear. So we are following his adventures on his last day, knowing that it's his last day, but wondering how and why he's going to die. We understand that he has an alcohol problem. We understand that he has quite a lot of problems, but it's very hard to know why he's going to die, because, well, you can have alcohol problems and relationship problems without dying that day. And we only understand in the very end of the last chapter what actually happens to him, which is quite crazy. And so we are following his adventures and his relationship with his ex-wife, whose name is Yvonne. I think it's Yvonne. I'm pretty sure it's Yvonne. And she comes back after leaving him, and they try to bring their relationship back to life, but it doesn't seem to work. And we understand that she hasn't been super faithful, but we understand that he hasn't been the best of husbands in the world either. And this is a book that questions a lot of things. I studied it in my literature module last year when I was an undergrad lit student, and in that book, you also need to know one thing that I have not precised yet, but you need to understand a little bit of Spanish in order to understand Under the Volcano, because as I said, it takes place in Mexico, and there are quite a lot of words that are not stated at all. At least in my edition, it was a penguin, modern classics edition, and the Spanish words were not translated. It's not that terrible, but you know, you have words such as quebrón and I don't know, I don't have the words in my head, but you know, it's a very simple word. It would be dinero in quebrón, but it would be good if you know a little bit of Spanish. And another thing that is very interesting in that book, and that made it be one of my absolute favorite of all times, is that it follows not only the adventures of the consul, our main character, but the adventures of the author. Because Malcolm Lowry had a life that in some way is very similar to the consul's life. His relationships were kind of similar at times, his problem with alcohol is notorious, and there are things that happen to the consul in the book, especially hardships and papers that get lost. And I mean, I can't go into much detail here or I will just spoil everything, but those things happened to Malcolm Lowry as well when he was actually writing Under the Volcano for the first time, because you need to know that Malcolm Lowry wrote Under the Volcano 3 times and that nobody wanted to publish it even the third time, and he ended up getting published in the end. It's quite a long story, but really it's a beautiful book and it's a masterpiece to me. Something that can be very hard to understand, I totally agree with you. it's probably not the book that I would put into hands of a 15-year-old, for instance, because there are so many tragical things happening, and the language is quite complicated. Even the English is very complicated at times. So maybe read it, try it, you know, but don't force yourself into it. That's what I want to say. There are times when books are just not meant to be read right now, and they can be later. It's just like Jane Austen's Persuasion. Maybe in a year or two you will feel ready to read it, but if what I told you about Under the Volcano makes you want to have a read, maybe give it a try, because that's something that is wonderful, and that's a book that changed me, I would say. It's quite rare that I say so. I have maybe 1, 2 to 3 books a year that really change something in me, and Under the Volcano was one of them. And my last book of the year is Brian Friel's translations. So I read the book for my Irish literature module last year, and it's basically a tiny little play that focuses on translation and the power of language. We are following the adventures of a classroom in a little remote village in Ireland, and we are following the adventures of these people while the English are trying to... it's quite complicated to explain without spoiling once more, but the English want to rename the streets and the places of that little village actually, and we are following the adventures of these people and the way some people are okay with names changing and the way some people are just 100% opposed to it and just don't want the names to change. And it's a very powerful, even if short, discussion on the power of language for the identity of a country, the identity of a people. And there are very interesting moments in it. For instance, I'm thinking about one of the characters who is an Irishman who is actually working with the Englishman here, and his name is pronounced wrongly by one of the Englishmen. So his name, I don't remember it, I'm sorry, but let's say that it's X. Well, the Englishmen call him Y. And in the beginning of the book, he doesn't see the problem in it. I mean, he says that a name is a name and that nothing is more similar to a name than another name. But in the end, he realizes that it's actually very important, and that the way you are named changes a lot of things about your identity and the way you identify with yourself. And he ends up just not wanting that Englishmen call him any other way. I thought it was just wonderful. Once more, if you want more details about translations, I have a review on my blog of the book, and it's just wonderful. It's the kind of play that I dream of seeing played once in my life, because that's my problem. I always love reading plays, but it's always very, very complicated for me to see them, because the plays I read are usually in English, and I live in France, and when I travel, they aren't always the plays I want to see in the theaters. So yeah, but altogether, it was a very good reading year. I loved 2020. I read amazing books, and yes, I hope that this list of favorites made you happy and that it made you inspired, maybe, to pick a few of them and read them. I know that I have a love for classics that can be a little bit weird at times for people, but that's something I love, and if I can get you to understand that all classics aren't terrible and boring, and that there are just classics that are for you and classics that aren't, I would be the happiest woman on earth. So, that being said, I just wish you the best of all day, and I will talk to you next week.